apologies for, as I say, for the slow start. Okay? There are different ways of handling this. I'm inclined to go the speedy route, so that we check off on those, rather than go through all of the small amendments and things like that, most of which were their own work, fundamentally, where they were picking up cross-references or better terminology for what they were trying to achieve and so on. So is that okay if we proceed like that? So onward, let's, in the next hour, aim to be taken through the issues that we discussed as the committee, so that we can check that what we've asked for is indeed reflected now in this A list.
With some progressive shortcut.
Yeah. Not to set a bad example, because we do want to move quickly, but under 2C, more, sub 2C, no more than twice the number of persons eligible to be appointed as members. I understand what is meant there, but could that not lead to a misunderstanding? Because we use eligible in B as well, and we use it in a slightly different sense. Eligible in terms of range of appropriate skills in B, and in C, we're talking about the maximum number of members of the board that there should be. Do you see the minor point? It's not a major point, but I'm just wondering whether...
I think the twice that's in there,
we did talk about it, and I remember we said it will be too many people, and I proposed 1.5 times, but eventually we settled on not more than 10. I think that was the eventual...
Okay, that might also help us. Wait, just remind us, how many members are there on the board?
Five.
You see, my problem is not quite the same one, but do you see that the word eligible to be appointed in B means something different from eligible to be appointed in C? In B, it means this person can be shortlisted because they are an appropriate type of person. In C, it means five people. So if we go the direction that Masile is pointing to, it helps them. Am I right? I've compiled a shortlist consisting of not more than 10 persons. Can't imagine why they've got a problem.
Okay, I think we'll put in the no more than 10 persons, because that's quite clear.
No more than 10 persons, yeah? Yes, Adam?
If it can read, not more than 10 persons from whom the minister may appoint eligible members of absence. So out of that 10, the minister will appoint 5 eligible members. If it can read from whom...
But aren't we just jumping into D, E, and so on? The aviation experts referred to in paragraph B must compile a short list consisting of no more than 10 persons.
Full stop, yeah.
Okay. The aviation experts must submit the shortlist to the department for publication in the Gazette for public comment for a period of not less than 30 days. The minister must, after the period allowed for public comment and consideration thereof, as contemplated in subsection D, appoint the members as referred to subsection 1 from a list compiled by the aviation experts. The minister must, within 30 days from the date of appointment of the members of the Aviation Safety Investigation Board, notify Parliament of such appointment and publish such appointment in the Gazette. Okay.
Yeah.
That's fine. Okay, that's just... nothing has really changed. We just... not more than 10 persons, and then that's how the issue is. Okay? Okay, let's move along, if that's okay.
All right, thank you. Then if I can move us to page 8,
right.
Clause 16, we rejected the clause and we inserted a new clause, and that was to deal with the disqualification and removal of members of the Aviation Safety Investigation Board.
Right.
We did not have this in previously, and we had to put it in as discussed the committee. It's straightforward, it deals with all issues, and remember we also have to reshuffle the political office bearer. in that time. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's irrelevant, anyway. Okay, so that takes us to page 11.
On page 11, we've got a new clause in terms of the performance management system for the Accident Safety Investigation Board. And this is just to hold them accountable, because they're an independent board in terms of from a reporting point of view of what they're actually doing. It's also quite easy to read. And the main item there is that they must submit a report which will have to be tabled by the Minister in Parliament within 14 days of receipt of the report.
Where do we see that report?
That's on 17.6.
Okay.
I was still battling here with the D, N, and E.
So we're going back to which page? Six.
Yes, on page six.
Okay.
I'm still battling to read and understand this, including the F. Chair. I was of the opinion that after the short list has been compiled, we wanted to know about that short list as well, so that if there are any interested parties that approach us as committee, then we are able to interact. But now it looks like when the short list has been made, it just simply goes to the Gazette, and that's finished. And then we will only be notified when the appointments have been made. Now, the question is, after the appointment has been made and then we are being approached by interested parties, then what sort of action do we have?
Okay.
We're just missing
a reference to Parliament under D.
Yes.
Okay. I don't have a problem with it as it is, but I don't think there's a problem necessarily if we also include inform Parliament, because we're going to be relying on interested parties and stakeholders to raise issues. We're not going to have the confidence to know. So when it comes out in the Gazette, the shortlist, one assumes that if there's no problem, there's no problem, and if there is a problem, one recourse that stakeholders might take is to approach Parliament. In other words, the stakeholders will trigger it, not the fact that we've been reported to Parliament. That's the reason why we've got it like that, like it is here. But I don't think there's any insuperable problem in saying, as we do in the later one, the aviation expert must submit the shortlist to the department's publication in the Gazette for public comment for a period of not less than 30 days. And then we need to insert and notify Parliament. So can we just get a wording for that?
And notify Parliament of such shortlist.
So just read the sentence.
Okay, it will be the aviation experts must submit the shortlist to the department for publication in the Gazette for public comment for a period of not less than 30 days and notify Parliament of such shortlist.
And the department must.
Yeah, and the department must, yeah.
Must notify Parliament. Yeah. And the department must notify Parliament accordingly. Is that okay?
Yeah.
Yeah, this will work.
Hmm?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good. We're happy with that?
Yeah.
That will work. Advisors are happy with it?
Yeah.
Okay, thanks. Okay. Let's fast forward then to where we were, which was 11, yeah.
Okay, we discussed 11, and as I said, we made reference to the accountability in terms of sending the report to Parliament. Unless there's any other questions on the document.
So that's on the bottom there?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I think that's okay. Okay.
Can I jump to the next substantial issue. Hear me. Okay, that will be on page 18. In the middle of the page, chapter 6. This is a section that dealt with the installation authority, the board, and the director. It has been discussed last week and finalized. It's just copy, cut, and paste, and put in here word for word.
Okay, but let's just have a careful look at some of that.
Okay.
Objects wasn't a problem, I don't think. Members will have their own.
Committee's attention to clause 26.1, which is on page 23. That's the functions and responsibilities of the Civil Aviation Authority Board. That was a key issue that we debated in terms of the different models. And we inserted a change where 26.1 reflects the Civil Aviation Authority Board as the following function: A, to oversee the corporate governance of the Civil Aviation Authority in order to attain the objects of this Act. B, to provide strategic direction and corporate governance in order to attain the objects referred to in Section 72 of this Act. And C, to monitor service standards and customer satisfaction levels and to report to the Minister on any matter concerning such issues.
Okay, let's let that circulate so we can have a chance to cross-refer. Seems right, according to my notes, yeah? Okay, so then. And then we knocked out implement under sub 2A and B. But to determine, oversee, and revise, but not to implement. To determine, oversee, and revise again a second time, but not to implement.
That's correct.
Okay.
Okay, how do you separate?
How do you separate from Section 72 the role of the board from the first object A of 72? Is there a way that one is excluded? Because my understanding was that the safety and security thing is of the director but not the board.
Yes.
Is there a way that these things are separated?
Yes. I think the reference is to 72, which is correct.
Yes.
We're talking about 76.1b and how that how that impacts on and how 72 impacts on that. My reading of how it stands now, but let's just check that we've got it right, is that the board provides strategic direction on corporate governance. Okay, and not on anything else, in order to obtain the objects of the Civil Aviation Authority, which include all that range of things listed under 72.
Okay.
So I think that's how we're... I mean, there could be a bit of leakage there, but I think that's how we had agreed to handle that. Okay.
Okay, then, Chairman, page 24... Section 77.1, the appointment of the Civil Aviation Authority Board. We made changes to, in particular, 77.1D.
Okay, sorry, you just kind of got ahead of me a little bit. Let me just check, cross-refer to my document. I'm just looking at sub 2E, 76. To determine the policy... conditions, because that was another area where we had a change to the policy for conditions of employment and remuneration, allowances, and other service benefits of employees of the director. Okay, that looks right to me. What's under other than, yeah. Okay, sorry, Anwar, you were then taking us to
page 24.
Yeah.
Clause 77, which deals with the appointment of the Reservation Authority Board. And
right.
If you go to 77.1d, we've got two persons representative of the reservation industry with suitable financial expertise and operational expertise. And then E, we've got one person will be a legally qualified person with expertise in aviation law. The committee last week instructed us to have three people,
yes.
And just to deal with the language issue of those operations, finance, and legal expertise.
So you've done it slightly differently from what we'd agree, but you're doing the same thing.
Yes, then it deals a bit more correct, you know.
So the language is better. Because we'd originally said three persons, one was the other, financial, operational, and legal. And it just reads better if you have it as three persons representative of the selection of the civil financial. Okay, I understand. So the legal expert won't be a representative of the civil aviation, but will have aviation legal experience. And that's the difference there. Whereas the other two would actually be reps from the civil aviation thing. And that's what we want, I take it. Okay? You seem to be happy with that. So that's an improvement on our improvement. Okay?
The remainder of that section is fine. We haven't tampered too much with it.
You should say we haven't tampered with it.
Yeah. Okay, we haven't tampered with it. Thank
okay.
you. Thank you. Then if you move to page 26, we dealt with the meeting of the Selection Authority Board. That remains as we discussed.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Sorry, Jay. On page 21.
Yes.
Section 74.
Okay, just let us get there.
Page 22 of the A-list. 22 of the A-list.
Yes.
Paragraph B, 74.1b and G, refers to prescribed levies. So we just want to link that to be in terms of an act of parliament. So we don't deal with money matters. It's just an oversight there in respect of, because it provides that the civil aviation authority is funded from prescribed levies or charges on aircraft passengers and participants in civil aviation at B, and in G, prescribed levies on supply of aircraft fuel. So we just want to link that to be imposed in terms of, or to be received in terms of an act of parliament. So because this bill doesn't really deal with the levy issue, basically, as such. We just want to qualify where the prescribed levies will be derived from. I'm not sure if...
I'm not following.
Yeah.
Sorry, mainly because there's background noise. I think that's part of the problem here.
Paragraph B and paragraph G.
Yeah, I've got the paragraph. Yeah.
Yeah, the levies that... references to levies should
yes.
be linked to be prescribed levies in terms of an act of parliament. Because otherwise we're not sure where the levies will come from. Because it can't be imposed or derived from this particular act because it's dealt with another procedure.
Okay.
So we just want to link it to be in terms of an act of parliament. So it will be dealt with in terms of another piece of legislation dealing with money matters.
Okay. So you're telling us that, but the wording stays the same.
No, the wording, I want to give you the wording quickly.
Okay.
Paragraph B would now read, levies or charges on aircraft passengers and participants in civil aviation in terms of an act of parliament, that's B. We just add, after aviation, we add prescribed in terms of an act of parliament. We take out the first prescribed, and we say prescribed, levies or charges on aircraft passengers and participants in civil aviation prescribed in terms of an act of parliament. In G, it should be levies on the supply of aircraft fuel prescribed in terms of an act of parliament. Take out the first prescribed there. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, so where does that, once we pass this legislation, where does that leave the Civil Aviation Authority without its levies until there's an act allowing it to happen.
Treasury will have to make provision for this particular funding as such, because it can't be dealt with in this piece of legislation because it's a money related matter. But in the bill we provide for that, for levies to be prescribed in terms of another piece of legislation. So now Treasury has the authority as such to have legislation dealing with that particular issue.
And in the interim,
As Anwar just said, now they do have the Levies Act, and so they might as well provide it in terms of that piece of legislation as well.
But shouldn't we then reference it to that?
Don't ask in F any other money received in terms of South African Civil Aviation Authority of Levies Act.
If it is covered, that we need B and C then.
Yes, it is,
This is not G, this is not G and B. Oh.
So can we agree, without knowing exactly what it would be, that B, for instance, and similar for G, would read levies or charges on aircraft passengers and participants in civil aid.
As prescribed in terms of, and then we will indicate what the relevant the levy act or whatever it is. But we will have a proper reason. I'm having power to go with that on
the trip back. But that doesn't. Is there a sabotage or something? Thank you very much. What I'm now picking up is that the F, it is said that the F is a piece of legislation that governs levies and whatever. Now, we have included F as any other money received in terms of that levies act. Now, my question that arises is, do we need to put B and G? Because then we are actually repeating F.
Right. Well, that doesn't mean that it's A. But what you do is clear that F suppose insert the relevant piece of legislation after the word prescribed. Prescribed in terms of whatever that you need to repeat. Kim, we have a problem with the mic system yet.
Is it permissible to just say relevant legislation? I'm a little bit worried that the usual problem exists.
Mm.
You forget something and then someone
positive
is or as prescribed by law.
You say Act of Parliament is actually more specific.
As prescribed by an Act of Parliament.
Yeah.
We're not saying whether it exists, but it has exist or but it might be Act.
Is it one or two acts?
So by law.
By
national legislation or legislation.
In terms of law.
Okay.
No.
You'll be advised if you tell us. That's prescribed by national legislation.
By national legislation, yes.
But,
yeah.
That's national legislation.
And we repeat that first time.
Yep.
and so we leave it vague as to whether the legislation exists or doesn't exist.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's definitely. So we don't leave a gap.
And whether it's one act or two acts as well.
In any number. Okay, let's move on. Sure.
The remainder of the board issue is about 59.
It's in the local law, yeah.
Yeah, and the mic and it starts working quite. Also have it. The remainder of that clause regarding the subject of the board has been pretty much what we discussed at the beginning of your meeting.
Okay.
I think as soon as we should move forward to page number 31. Last three, the director of public security. If you look at clause 3, 85(3), we have to narrow that down in terms of the director's qualification sector. So we said three, when appointing the director in terms of subsection 1, the minister must take into account the following factors: such person's management and aviation technical knowledge and experience, and B, such person's suitability and competence for the efficient discharge of the director's powers and duties under this act. Those are the two key changes that we made last time. Then we also went on to clause 5A, which is the director is appointed in such conditions that may be agreed upon by the minister and the director, including conditions providing for remuneration allowances as the minister determines after consultation with the Minister of Finance and the Subrelations of the Board.
Yeah. That's it, John. Excuse me.
Okay, then in page 33, because it's not substantive, it's just that we rearrange, you see on top of page 33, C becomes a particle bearer, we move it down to the bottom of the list.
It looks like I'm dragging a little bit behind than anybody else. Here on page 25, there is 3C that talks about not more than 10 members eligible for appointment, and somewhere with 15 paragraphs like that we have debated now. Am I confused? Because I thought we talked about this somewhere. That was the investigation board. Okay, now, thanks. Okay.
Okay, so
now, in other ways, is that on page 25, that 3C needs to be doctored exactly the same as the other one, after the shortlist has been made, to add that notify Parliament accordingly,
yeah.
To add that at the end of it. because that's the way it's much more important as well. Are we together, sir?
Right.
On page, or you are looking behind like me. On page 25, that's where now we're talking about the board. So remember, we said when the short list has been made before, and gazetted, then we should also be notified of the office so that we are able to interact with it when we are engaged. So just simply to add exactly the same wording as we added the other one. That one of notifying Parliament accordingly.
Yes,
and
notify Parliament accordingly.
Yes.
Okay.
On that C only. Now I can join everybody on page 3.
Question is just as an issue of drafting. I think that's first or there in 3A must come off. Then I said or and then all the must just be one or at the end of
the
3A.
Yeah. After the third line. Or just comes up. Thank you, man. Then if we move to page 38, clause 97, restriction on use of names. We cleaned up the language in 97.1, there is no person made under a name containing the word Sarafi, Sidney Shitoki, or the acronym PAA, or SACA, for translation thereof any other official language. A, conduct his or her, or his affairs or business, or carry on his or her, or his occupational faith. B, be registered license under any law, or C, falsely claim to be acting on behalf of the position authority. And to any person contravening a provision of Article 1 is guilty of an offense and liable and conviction to fine or imprisonment for period not exceeding 6 months or to all such fine and imprisonment. And that one up.
On section 98 on page 39 dealing with conflict of interest, I'm just going to highlight without reading the entire section out. Just on the second line at the end, it says in writing. which is what the committee requires.
Yes.
On the second line
of clause 98.1. The clause is any person appointed to perform any function in terms of the act or the regulation must appoint such appointment a day after in writing, and you know, as when such conflict may occur, and it just continues.
I just wanted some explanation on subclause 2. It looks like there is heavy English that has been written in there that I can't make the meaning.
It's a very long thing.
Should any interest refer to in subsection 1?
I can't make sense out of those
but yeah,
what is what it says.
Maybe a comma would help. A comma or two. Should any interest referred to in subsection 1, comma, maybe, which may compromise his or her independence in carrying out his or her duties and functions in terms of this act, comma, vest in a person referred to in that subsection, comma, by way of gift, will, succession, or otherwise, such interest must be absolutely disposed of within 3 months of such vesting. Okay, I think it does make sense. But you have to hold your breath to get there. Thank you very much.
What will that mean?
You're called it just so that you're able to connect that in the middle of that whole big paragraph, which is also one sentence. The active verb there is vest. It's not like this vest.
Yeah.
Okay. And the active subject of that verb is interest in the first line, the third word. So you have to wait a long time to get to work out what's the verb. Should any interest In fact, you even need another comma, don't you? Should any interest? Mm-hmm. Subsection. So, can we this is the Cronin Amendment, okay? I hope it will go down in history. Should any interest, comma, refer to in subsection 1, and knock out that first comma, which, should any interest refer to in subsection 1, which may compromise his or her independence in carrying out his or her duties and functions in terms of the act, comma, best in a person referred to that, then it starts to make sense. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Let
yeah.
Okay. Can I proceed?
So that person must.
Yeah, get it up
in. Dive in. Meaning that it is the ownership of either a particular company, then must relinquish that ownership or
relinquish the job.
Okay.
Okay. Right. Yeah, fine. It was always there. It was just a question of being able to understand what it was saying. Okay. Well, lots of nice raw material for lawyers to fight over in future years. Okay. Okay, then the job creation. Okay. All right.
Okay.
Then on subclause 3, just below that clause,
If any person referred to in subsection 1 discloses an interest contemplated in subsection 1, the director may take such steps as he or she considers necessary to ensure a fair, unbiased, and proper exercise of the function of such person in terms of this act. Okay? Then 4 is a new clause which we discussed. Was if any person referred to in subsection 1 fails to disclose an interest contemplated in subsection 1, the director may take disciplinary steps against such person.
When a person has failed to disclose, I think there is no option of doing any other thing other than taking the disciplinary action. The name is misleading. It is correct on the upper one.
Yes.
When a person
discloses,
anything happens.
Yes.
He may take disciplinary or he may not. But with this one, there is an offense. This clause is talking about an offense that is okay.
Yes.
Now, if we now provide for a name, I think it's not really true.
Okay, can we hear? Is there a counter argument to that too? Chairman, we must also bear in mind that non-compliance with any of the provisions of the Act might, in certain instances, constitute an offence.
Yes.
So that leaves the door open whether the failure to disclose the interest might be of such a nature to warrant prosecution.
Yes.
Then normally you would not, under those circumstances, immediately take steps in the form of disciplinary steps. So we should bear that in mind as well. That's why there should be a discretion for the director.
But it's a discretion and hence the man. Of course, it would be a choice between.
Correct.
Okay, but you can see the concern as well. We want to make it clear that something must happen if there's a failure to disclose. Something must happen.
If the person is failing to disclose and moves into another department, it is a step that has been taken by the director. But now the may provide for non-action on a failure to disclose. The may is providing for an opportunity of non-action. And now that's what I'm actually asking, whether that is correct on this particular matter.
Okay, I can hear the arguments both ways. So I'm battling to say what we should do. Yeah.
The chairman, in any event, in terms of the LRA,
yeah.
The director as employer in that position could take steps in terms of the conditions of service.
Yeah.
So
Lemus is wanting to talk. Is not wanting to empower the director. Is wanting to tell the director that if there's a failure to disclosure, then things must happen. Not that there's the discretionary ability to make things happen, which might be, as you say, a criminal charge, or it might be internal disciplinary measures. Now, I understand your argument, which is why you put the mayor. It's in order to give that discretion. But what Lemus doesn't want is for nothing to happen.
Even when there is a criminal charge, at the end of the day, to actually get rid of the person because of a court conclusion, then there is still a disciplinary action that needs to be taken. And on the basis of either a court conclusion, then he said, no,
yeah.
You are fired,
yeah.
Or whatever. But a non-action, that's why I just have a problem within the institution itself. It's either whether it's a thing that does not run
a legal action, it is done internally. If it also includes a legal process, either you wait for the legal process to be concluded, and when it has been concluded, then internally you finalize the matter and decide on the fate of the incumbent. If it's locked up and
okay,
thanks.
The chair, I don't think there's any problem with a must.
Okay. Can anyone see? Take advice. Can see a problem with a must as opposed to a may. Stuart?
Either way, I mean, what we discussed and I had a note about here was that he takes these, you may take disciplinary steps to
to ensure that such conflict of interest does not arise in the future. That's the words I had here. It might have been my own wording when we were thinking and talking about it, but it means that, you know, that it doesn't arise again. So,
Can we agree to much?
Yes.
Okay. Okay.
All right. Then, if we can move to page 41. Part 5, which is aviation security.
Chairperson?
Yeah?
Can I just maybe refer the committee back to page 40, 99.
Page 40?
40.
Can you see?
Page 40.
Yeah.
Clause 99. The inclusion to of the Civil Aviation Authority under this limitation of liability clause. The clause was initially drafted to protect employees,
yes.
And seeing that the Civil Aviation Authority is a juristic person,
yes.
I don't think that the Civil Aviation Authority should be afforded this type of protection because it has to go through the normal process. Should it be challenged, any action should it be challenged. So we would advise that we revert back to the previous position and we delete the reference to the Civil Aviation Authority, which should also be protected in terms of this.
Okay. You did raise that informally with us as we concluded. So no, your advice is no employee of the Civil Aviation Authority is liable in respect of anything done in good faith, etc. Mm-hmm. And leave out the CA. And there seems to be agreement on that.
Okay.
Okay. Thanks for that. You did raise that with us. Okay.
Thank you. Okay. If we go to page 41, part 5, aviation security, the core change to this part has been, Chairman, on our last meeting, we were instructed to include the National Aviation Security Committee. Because we spoke of a National Aviation Security Program, and the committee felt that this was a consultation process that they acted in, and then we also spoke about the coordination element that was silent on in our last discussion.
Yes.
So what we've done is, without going to page 41, 42, and 43,
yeah.
In the bottom of page 43, clause 104.1, we've now included a new sub-clause, which is for National Aviation Security Committee,
right.
And it reads as follows. 104.1, the Minister must institute a National Aviation Security Committee composed of the Director General of the Department, who shall also be the chairperson of the committee, and in the absence, a member of the National Aviation Security Committee, upon the Aviation Security Committee, is to act as chairperson. B, an official responsible for national air transport facilitation designated by the minister. C, an official designated by the director general. D, the director or an official designated by the director. E, an employee of the Airports Company Limited, as defined in Section 1 of the Airports Company Act, 93, Act 44-993, designated by the Airports Company Limited. F, an officer designated by the chief of the South African National Defence Force. G, a person designated by the director after consultation with the minister. H, an official designated by the director general of the National Intelligence Agency. I, an official responsible for disaster management designated by the director general of provincial and local government. J, an official designated by the director general of the South African Secret Service. K, a member designated by the National Commission of the South African Police Service. L, an employee of the Air Traffic and Navigation Services Company, as defined Section 1 of the Air Traffic and Navigation Services Company Act, 93, Act 44993, designated by the Air Traffic and Navigation Services Company Limited. M, an official designated by the Coordinated National Intelligence Coordination Committee. N, an official designated by the Director General of Foreign Affairs. O, an official responsible for immigration designated by the Director General of Home Affairs. P, an official responsible for customs designated by the Commissioner of South African Revenue Services, and Q, any other person designated by the Director General from time to time. This list, Mr. Chairman, is from the regulation, the current regulation in terms of formulation of the committee.
Okay, they just listed it up from
it. Just listed it up, yeah.
Just remind us why we did this, Nicole.
Okay, we did this because we spoke of coordination when we had a National Aviation Security Program.
Yes.
And the industry wanted to know what was coordination, so did the members. And then there was an explanation revolving around the government agencies they have to coordinate the various functions to ensure the implementation of the national education program successfully. And that is why we included it in this clause. We also included in here the issue that affects the stakeholders with regards to consultation. I'll read this out as well.
Okay.
So if I may proceed, clause 2, it says every person...
I still need some explanation, Chair. The first explanation that I need on this particular committee is its status on security clearance, whether there is anywhere where there is any reference on their security clearance. And also I would like, over and above, the director may be being part of that security clearance or an official designated by the director. The relationship between the director or the office of the director and this committee, what sort of relationship are they having, other than just being a member of the committee, in terms of reporting or accountability or whatever.
Okay.
As we know the line to the minister, but now, when the minister establishes this kind of committee, and then what relationship does it have with the office of the director of the Civil Aviation Authority?
Thank you. I think let me answer the last part of the question first, because the distinction over here is related to the National Aviation Security Program, the coordination of government agencies and departments to ensure the successful implementation of the National Aviation Security Program. By virtue that the CAA is the enforcement agent for the National Aviation Security Program, would mean that they would have to be part and parcel of all the relevant government departments that have in effect take and participate at the airport with regards to the program. So that's the role they would play. In terms of security clearance, it's a very important point. We would have inserted security clearance because while one may assume that all these government agencies would have security clearance, perhaps we need to be quite clear in the act and put it that they must obtain the top secret security level of clearance. And we will include that.
You will include it?
We'll include it now, yeah.
In our A list. So let's do that right now.
We can insert that below clause 4, 3 at least, or we can insert it before clause 2, just under clause 1 as a new clause 2.
Okay, let's have wording.
Wording is that?
A member of the National Aviation Security Committee must...
Of the National Aviation Security Committee must
have a top secret security clearance. That would accord with the directors as well.
Okay, thanks, Lemia. Okay. And then the present 2 becomes 3 and the present 3 becomes 4. Stop.
Okay, all right, and then clause 2.
In the composition of that committee, is there a need to have any of the sort of aviation operators involved? I ask that because they could bring to light certain security factors which need to be addressed, and how does that then link the two?
Presumably that comes with a consult advisory type structure that you're going to take us to in a moment. Because this is a governmental entity, basically, coordinating governmental safety and security things with top secret clearance and so on. But at the same time, you want an interface, as you're correctly saying, and I think we'll get to that in a moment, don't we?
Yes, that's correct. Okay, and then if there's got a new clause 2, I'm just going to read the existing clause 2 as there, which has become now clause 3. Every person designated in pursuance of subsection 1 as member of the National Aviation Security Committee must be authorized to bind his employer in decisions taken to advise the minister in the exercise of National Aviation Security Committee's functions. Okay, that's just that. Given that it's his commitment.
Yeah.
Okay. And it's mandated as such.
Yeah.
Then the old 3, which becomes now 4, in the process of the establishment and development of the policies as contemplated in section 103, the committee must, where any matter which may affect any stakeholder, consult with the relevant stakeholder or stakeholders in the aviation industry. Okay. Then clause 105 deals with the objects of the National Aviation Security Committee, and the objects of the National Aviation Security Committee are to advise the minister with regard to aviation security policy, review and make recommendations of the effectiveness of the security measures and procedures, and C, provide for coordination to ensure the proper and diligent implementation of national aviation security programs. Okay. Right. Meeting the National Aviation Security Committee, clause 106.1, the National Aviation Security Committee shall meet as often as the chairperson deems expedient, but not less than 4 times annually. 2. The National Aviation Security Committee may co-opt as a temporary member of the National Aviation Security Committee a person who is an authority with regard to a specific matter. Okay. Maybe I should just explain that second part a bit more. Because of the nature of the industry, sometimes the committee may require an expert from Macayo to come and advise, and that's why we have allowed them that and such. Okay. Then security program information confidential.
No, they are too fast. Mm-hmm. So this 106.2 chairperson. We said that these members are to be appointed by the minister into this security committee. Mm. Now here we empower the committee on its own now to co-opt somebody else. No. Shouldn't then we say, you know, it's, they can invite, if there is a person of a specific knowledge, invited for that particular purpose, in that particular meeting, and then to do what is required, and then that person then doesn't become a permanent member. If you co-opt, that person now continues to be a member. That means that the committee can co-opt members outside the minister. Are we together, or am I misunderstanding too? But yeah. I've got a problem with the word co-op, because that will make that person a member of this committee, but not through the minister, behind the minister.
Okay. And maybe that then raises a question around Q on page 45 as well. Any other person designated by the Director General from time to time?
I think both points are valid. What do you suggest, Chairman, Q, we change the Director General to reflect the Minister? As I pointed out. Okay.
So any other person designated or appointed?
Designated.
Any other person designated by the Minister from time to time?
Just the minister must institute. So he's just, his role is to say, guys, get this thing together. DG, you do it. And in that particular process, there's a whole range of agencies and government departments who are going to be on that committee. But surely the minister is not going to go and start picking and choosing who should be there, whether it should be X, Y, Z from Home Affairs, Z, Y, you know, from...
Yeah, well, that's clear, because it is.
Yeah.
Different departments designate different officials.
I'm saying in the same sense, you know, once that's been instituted, that committee, they should have certain discretion. And whether we need to now sort of change the designation of the particular chairperson who is the, as I see it, the Director General, as being the person to do that, or not, I don't. And maybe that the common, rather than put minister in there every time now.
No, well, let's not do that.
Or his delegated authority.
Let's as you talk, let's keep Q as it is. Any other person designated by the Director General from time to time. Okay. But 106 sub 2, which Lemus has drawn our attention to, do we need to make a person a temporary member, or just make provision for people to be able to be invited to...
Yeah.
Yeah. In
can invite, so it doesn't have to be a temporary member or a permanent member. I think it also removes the element of becoming a permanent party to the committee as such. So we're quite inclined to agree to the National Aviation Security Committee may invite.
Do we need to say it at all? Surely a committee can make those decisions without us having to write it in legislation.
Comment on that paragraph.
Sorry,
Lennox,
so you talk.
Yeah, so I would like to say that we keep the sentence in chair.
Okay.
So that, you know, it doesn't raise this question when the committee invited a particular person, and then you find that now legally you have challenged these people asking why that specific person has been invited while not being a member of the committee. If we can empower or enable the committee through a provision that they can call people with specific speciality to address, so that they don't just do out of their own will.
So you're happy with it as it is?
Yes, but we changed the word co-opt. I've got a problem with the word co-opt. But for the committee to invite any person with speciality to address the committee on a particular matter, I'm happy that it is.
Okay. Mine is a little bit different because I don't see how the co-option or even the inviting of a temporary member has anything to do with meetings of the National Aviation Security Committee. Surely it should fall under those people who are part of that committee. And I would like to just amend Q and say any other person designated by the Director General who is an authority with regard to a specific matter. In which case, it's got nothing to do with how often you meet or anything like that. It's actually a person that you're now actually trying to, as my colleague said, co-op, but it's not the right word, but if you bring it back into the body of the actual committee under Q and add it to that any other person designated by the Director General from time to time, and then you can add this butcher who is an authority with regard to a specific matter and take two out completely. Okay, that's another route.
Yeah.
Any preferences? If we put it under two, then it's an invitation. A meeting of a National Aviation Security Committee may invite someone who's not a member in order to make a specialist input. And then it would be appropriate under meeting. But when we start to talk about co-opt or member or temporary member, then it doesn't belong there. Which is Lemius's point in one way and Stuart's point in another. And perhaps fits more comfortably under Q. But maybe Q doesn't achieve everything you want either.
Yeah,
sir.
Yeah,
Lemius?
Yeah, I understand what Honorable Farrer said, but when you bring it under Q, that particular person starts becoming a member of the committee.
Yeah.
And whereas the specific speciality may have been identified for a short period of time, so this will be a permanent member. And if another speciality arises, then the Director General will identify another person. Eventually, this particular committee may be of 50 people, bit by bit. But under
and the meaning of
under two, at least it provides for people at a particular time when that particular speciality is important.
Okay,
and then that person deals with that, and when it's finished, and then it's released. And
yes, we must leave it under 106Q, and we have a suggested text relating to the meeting in particular, and it as follows. The National Aviation Security Committee may invite any person to a meeting or meetings of the National Aviation Security Committee with an authority with regard to any specific matter.
The National Aviation Security Committee may invite any person or person
to a meeting or meetings of the National Aviation Security Committee with an authority with regard to any specific matter.
Okay, just in case there was doubt about that. And then we're happy to keep Q as it is.
That's great.
Okay.
Now, okay, I'm not sure what "from time to time" particularly means, but that's fine. I think I understand. Okay.
Now the Q, I'm not yet convinced.
Okay.
Why are we retaining the Director General?
I'll definitely need a serious explanation, because as I've started the debate on that one, my understanding was that this particular section establishes the committee, and this particular committee is established by the minister. Whether it is the Director General that actually picks these people from relevant institutions in accordance with this, at the end of the day, these people must be appointed by the minister. I don't know whether that I'm understanding this.
There's no mention of ministerial appointment. If you go to the bottom of page 43, the minister must institute. The minister must instruct, basically, the DG to set up a National Aviation Security Committee, which is composed of then a variety of departments designate, not the minister, doesn't appoint. The Minister of Transport doesn't appoint the person from intelligence or Home Affairs, whatever. The relevant departments appoint, designate the official that will represent them and will have the power to commit their department, their minister, to whatever is agreed on in this national security. Okay.
So
if you want to, if you need additional people with, and that's, it is important when you make a list like this to give yourself a bit of breathing space, because you might have left out something, or suddenly something becomes really important, and you want further members from time to time to be brought into the board, and then the Director General, as the chair of the committee, does. Okay?
Right.
I think that Lennox's problem is really relating to the broadness of a committee deciding as opposed to a single entity.
Yeah.
And maybe we should just consider using the DG, as they've already given a certain amount of authority to that DG in respect of the chairperson, to allow other designated people. Maybe they can also look at this. But rather use a committee, just use it.
I'm not sure what you're saying.
On 1062, the National Aviation Security Committee, it's a whole body, rather than giving the choice to that, to give it to one person already designated to elect and take committee out and use it. The National Aviation Security, you could use chair or something like that, because that is what the DG is, may invite, etc., etc.
Now, let's keep them as they are, as we've agreed. Let's keep Q as it is. I know you're not talking to you, but let's keep Q as it is. And then let's keep 2 with the National Aviation Security Committee. Go on, yeah. The chair acting on behalf of the committee would be the person sending the letter or whatever. But okay, can we move?
Yeah.
Let's move. Okay. Yeah, I know you were trying to help. Let's move that.
All right, thank you. And if you could move...
Say Lord Brother.
Yeah, I just have a point under 106.
Yeah.
I see there's no procedure for these meetings as to how these meetings will be conducted. So maybe we should add a clause stating that the committee will determine its own procedures for meetings. I'm not sure. It's just a proposal. Because there's nothing that's for voting and what happens in case of absence of members, all those things.
I think that's probably wise to do. So give us, that would be a sub 2, huh?
Yeah.
A new sub 2.
So the National Aviation Security Committee must determine its own procedures for meetings. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you.
Okay.
Another thing arises in my mind.
Oh dear. Okay. Yeah.
It's just unfortunately.
unfortunately, this paragraph is a new paragraph here, and it actually rocks my mind. Because now I was of the opinion that this thing is being constituted by the minister. Now with this new explanation, then I start worrying about the security clearance that we have been talking about. Because now we are saying the Director General of the Department of Transport will chair this committee. And then what happens if that Director General doesn't pass the security clearance? Because surely I don't think there is a requirement for the Director General of the Department of Transport to pass the security clearance. It's not like the same maybe in Home Affairs or Intelligence. I'm not sure. And then, but now, is that Director General, because we have been specific, that will chair this particular committee. If that particular person then doesn't pass security clearance, how do we move on this particular one?
I don't know how to respond. All I can say is that public servants and officials, when we get access to cabinet members and all, we have to have security clearance. So I'm not sure why a Director General won't pass the security clearance. And if you do have a Director General without a security clearance, then nothing's very wrong.
And that would be a top secret clearance. Okay, so it is a requirement.
This is currently the requirement.
Okay,
fine.
It's good to ask, yeah. Okay.
Thank you very much. Okay, then on page 47, in the A-list, we got a few amendments we should pick up now. We refer to an aviation safety plan. It should actually read aviation security program submitted to the minister for approval.
Okay.
And then you go to clause 109, an aviation security program which is drawn up in terms of this part, all the regulations shall be submitted to the minister for approval and shall by virtue of such approval be binding, A, on any official in the service of the state, any designated airport security officer, an air service security officer, and any other person involved in the application of such security program in an official capacity. Okay. And then B, on any other person, including a member of the public, where the contents of such program have been brought to the notice of such person in a manner determined by the Director General.
Okay, just the bold subheading on line 3, effective line 3 there, page 47. Does it still read aviation safety plan?
Aviation security program.
In the body, plan, but you are reading progress.
It's an aviation security program.
So that should
be take a safety plan. Okay.
We talk about people there as a designated airport safety officer. That should be in capitals, I assume. Airport service safety officer. Are they not people?
Don't think so. No. But let's leave that to Federal Advisors, whatever. It's not a title. I mean, it's not a position. The question is whether airport under A, 109A, airport safety officer, air service safety officer should be in caps, or whether they should read as they are.
Can read as
description
of positions.
Okay. Let's make progress.
Okay, there isn't much other changes we made to the security element. The remainder of the document deals a lot with the input received from industry for the smaller issues, insertion of words, deletion of words. Unless my colleagues have something that I may have omitted, to
let you. Okay, let's check with your colleagues. Do you have anything you want to raise with us? These are inspection procedures and things like that, the kinds of things that they would be vigilant about. How far you can go, what you can do, and so on. I mean, one of the things which we've not dwelt on, but which we've received in the past public representation on, is around precisely interference with air crews and those issues. So when we present it in the House, we should devote a little bit of time to that, to noting that. I mean, like FIDUSA members will remember, came to us and talked about serious problems that we're encountering as air crews with the behavior of passengers and things like that, and wanted to see things tightened up. Now, we haven't, in the last week, paid much attention to that, because we've been looking more at the governance and institutional side of things. Okay. Anything else, though, that our attention needs to be drawn to? Anwar, you're happy? Okay. Adam, you're happy? Okay. So let's, and I think members are happy? And we've got a quorum, so I'm happy? Okay. So what I'm going to do this in a very quick way rather than go clause by clause. But, okay, so. It's important to be
there. It's relating to definitions. Now, we were going to get, because we kept on referring and saying we need to define that, we need to define that, we need to define that.
Yeah.
But we don't have in the A-list actual inclusion of definitions. Now, one thing I think is just, you know, that comes to mind, if I can remember, was that whole instance of trying to define what was an accident, what was an incident. And in the original clause, we had like serious incident, but you know, we never had any word used of a serious incident before in the text. Now, we need to just either move the serious away, and if an incident is an incident as it refers and defined there, we must keep it like that. But not serious, you know, there's little things like that, and I'm just a little bit concerned that we maybe have not captured that because it's not here. And I just need to go back to that and check, if you don't mind, the definition, because it's... The other one was that one that was raised where they referred to authorized person, and as it was defined, it actually related to, for instance, in the defense or SANDF ranking, everybody down to a civilian, you know, it could be... that would be classified in that particular category, and I don't think that is what the intention of what they wanted to know as an authorized person. I assume it's someone that's security cleared, that is, you know, assigned or delegated to actually, you know, access an accident site. So those are the little things like that. I also spoke about the issue of the glider, which the Law Society brought up, as to whether that was covered, and I think... Anwar did actually answer me in sort of private discussion, but those are little things. I just want to get satisfaction in my mind that we're going to have a very clear and concise list of all the definitions that we refer to now, including NASP and all that.
Okay, well, let's be specific rather than just asking good faith. Let's revisit the incident, accident, serious incident issue. Let's just be reminded of where it occurs in the body of the bill.
Mr. Chairman, the definition of serious incident should be included on the A list as an omission. And the reason is we make provision in the definitions for aircraft accidents
right. And
aircraft incidents.
Right.
That covers all the possibilities that we might have.
Right.
The usage of the word serious incident was an omission that we did not take it out. It refers to an ICAO sort of definition of what a serious incident is.
Right.
But we've decided that aircraft accident and aircraft incident
covers it all.
Covers it all. So that definition should just be removed from the text and inserted in the A-list, Chairman.
So is it currently in?
It is currently in, serious incident. And that should be inserted on the A-list.
Okay, so thanks for that thing. So insert...
And then we've
extended, as a mission, yeah.
We've extended the aircraft accidents, aircraft incidents, to refer to Annex 13 of the convention. That is also currently in the A-list.
So that's currently in the A-list?
Correct.
And that's on page 1 of the A-list, in fact, in the middle there, under clause 1.
Correct.
Okay. So that's how you've strengthened that aspect.
Correct.
Okay. Then, authorized person? Where's that, Stuart?
It's Walter Whitman. I mean, if I go back to the first form, at the bottom of page 9, and they refer to any member of the South African National Defence Force as defined in Section 1 of the Defence Act. My understanding, that covers all ranks, and civilian posts, and everybody is an authorised person, and I think it was the Cape Law Society, I can't remember, brought that issue up as to say, well, you know, should it not be an assigned member of the SANDF, I think the word they used, because otherwise you're just broadening that whole authorised body into a wide range of people which might not really necessarily want to be there.
Just, sorry, you said page 9 of the original bill. What clause is it?
The scheduled definition.
It's under the... under
the right?
Yes. Yes.
Yes, it is. Mr. Chairman, the reference there is quite correct. It should refer to Section 1A. Otherwise, it includes visiting forces as well.
Okay.
Okay.
So that reference is right, as it is now.
No.
Okay.
The most job study to include A. 1A.
Okay,
that's
just
1A. No, paragraph 1A of the Defense Act.
Okay, so let's just have clarity.
Yeah, just the reference. In terms of the South African Police Service Act,
Police or Defence Force?
South African Police Service Act. Is that the act that... or Defence Force? Because I think we just need to... I probably just need to check, because I think I remember that the South African Police Service Act, they refer to Section 1, but you can't refer to Section 1A, because there's no 1A.
Okay.
Because
Okay. But when we come to the National Defence Force, we refer to 1A in the Defence Act.
Okay, we just need to check the reference. I'm not sure. I haven't checked the reference. Sorry.
Yeah. Okay, so we've got two different concerns, not one. The one is just a textual concern, basically. Is there a 1A, and is it the appropriate one? Department's telling us, yes, it is appropriate, and 1A, because that excludes visiting American sailors or whatever on the aircraft carrier. They're not authorized persons here.
Okay. Actually, 1B and C would then include visiting forces.
Which is why we specify 1A. I've got it. Okay. And then Stuart's raising a separate one, which he's deriving, he thinks, from the Cape Law Society or something like that, which said, do we really mean to include ordinary able seamen or whatever they're now called, etc., as authorized persons? And the answer is yes. It's basically anyone who's...
Those are basically the people that have powers of arrest under those certain circumstances.
Okay.
That would include all permanent members of the Defence Force.
Any permanent member of the Defence Force. Okay, is that right, said Lord?
Now he doesn't say permanent members.
Let's hold it on. As designated in that particular...
Thank you, Chair. I don't have a problem with the input given by Mr. Kellerman. I'm just concerned about the reference, but we'll sort that out. Can we undertake to sort that out? But I don't have a problem with the input with regard to where that particular person will fall under.
Okay, so you'll just just double-check on the reference.
Yeah.
But notwithstanding what the Cape Law Society may or may not have said, it is correct to understand that any permanent member of the Defence any wing of the defense force has power in and is therefore an authorized person. And then the glider matter.
There's a definition for aircraft, firstly, in the book.
Yeah.
Now, gliders are dealt with extensively in Part 61 of the aviation regulations. It's a whole separate issue dealt in terms of regulation. Now, I just want to make an example, as I discussed with the member earlier, is when you talk about smoking on board in terms of this act, how do you apply it to a glider if you incorporate the glider in? You know, you're on a glider. But in terms of technical specification, which is civil aviation technical specs and the civil aviation regulations, all issues pertaining to gliders are covered. In terms of the oversight, that's also covered with the authority. So we don't have to refer to glider over here. What we have to refer to is the overarching issue in terms of aircraft.
Okay, it's getting harder and harder to hear ourselves. We've sent someone out to help us, but I'm not sure if we'll succeed. But maybe we shouldn't worry. So are we okay now? There's some fiddly things that we're asking state law advisors to do, and in general, to go through it once more again before we hit the National Assembly, just to make sure numbering and all of the usual things are okay. Okay, can I then read the motion of desirability? Okay. That in the opinion of the committee, legislation is desirable to repeal, consolidate, and amend the aviation laws, giving effect to certain international aviation conventions to provide for the control and regulation of aviation within the Republic, to provide for the establishment of a South African Civil Aviation Authority with safety and security oversight functions, to provide for the establishment of an independent aviation investigation board in compliance with Annex 13 of the Chicago Convention, to provide for the appointment of a national civil aviation security coordinator, to provide for additional measures directed at more effective control of the safety and security of aircraft, airports, and the like. And I've lost my way there now. And something or other. Effective control, safety and security, aircraft, airport, and the like, and to provide for matters connected thereto, and that the bill referred to the committee be taken as a basis. So can I have a mover, please? Stuart, okay, and a seconder, thank you very much. Okay, so we're the 12th of November. Okay. Then, can I just quickly note, just so that we button that down, the things that we've done today. So we're accepting the A-list as a true and accurate reflection of what we've wanted, with the following amendments to the A-list. In terms of the definition, we're agreeing that we must omit now the definition on serious incident. That just falls away. And that what we've got under clause 1 in the middle of the page on our A list now helps us to cover that with its reference to Annex 13 of the Convention. Okay? Page 2, page 3, page 4, I'm talking about the A list now, 5. Until we get to page 6. On page 6, clause 15, sub 2, paragraph 15, sub 2, C, now reads, the aviation experts referred to in paragraph 5B must compile a short list consisting of no more than 10 persons to be appointed as members of the aviation space. No. But that's right, well, full stop. The aviation experts referred to in paragraph B, must compile a short list consisting of no more than 10 persons. Full stop. Sorry about that.
Just a no or not.
Of not more probably reads better. Of not more than 10 persons. But we can leave that to the discretion of our yes. Okay. Then under D, we add, of not less than 30 days, comma, and the department must notify Parliament accordingly. Okay, page 7, we've kept the same. Same with 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, sorry, I'm 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22. 74, 1B now reads, B, levies or charges on aircraft passengers and participants in civil aviation as prescribed by by national legislation. Okay. And we do the same under G, levies on the supply of aircraft fuel as prescribed by national legislation. Okay? Otherwise, we're happy. 22, 23, 24. On 25, sub 3, C, we tack on to the end of C, comma, and notify Parliament accordingly. Stop. Okay? 26, 27, 28, 29, 30, 31, 32, 33, 34, 35. On 36, on the third line, we're just knocking up the all. During a vacancy in the office of director, knock out the all and then go straight into 30. 37, 38, 39. 98.2, we added commas. Should any interest, comma, refer to blah, 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 in terms of this act, comma, vest. So we just added two commas. And then sub 4, 98, must take disciplinary steps. No. 40. Under 99, limitation of liability, we are just referring to no employee of the Civil Aviation Authority, and we knock out all the Civil Aviation Authority. So no employee of the Civil Aviation Authority is liable. 41, 42, 43, 44, 45. After some debate, we're keeping Q as it is, but then we're adding a new sub 2. A member of the National Aviation Security Committee must have a top secret security clearance. And then 2 becomes 3, and the existing 3 becomes 4. Then on page 46, we're adding a new sub 2 under 106. The National Aviation Security Committee must determine its own procedures for meeting. And then 2 becomes 3, and we've changed the wording there. We've said the National Aviation Security Committee may invite any person or persons, did we say? Not necessarily any person, presumably, because that would be plural as well. So may invite any person to a meeting or meetings of the National Security Aviation Security Committee who is an authority with regard to a specific matter. It would be slightly better if we said may invite any person who is an authority with regard to a specific matter to a meeting or meetings of the National Security Aviation Security Committee. Okay. The order might be just a bit better like that. Yeah. Okay, but that's clear?
Right,
yeah?
Write it in singular. It will be right in both.
Is that clear what I've just said? Okay. It's clearer to you than it is to me, but that's good. Okay. On page 47, we've changed the bold heading to Aviation Security Program and our Safety Plan. 48, 49.
Also, sorry.
Yeah.
On page 47, not just the heading, also in the text clause,
109A, we changed the word safety to reflect security. Wherever it was safety, we said security. And it will read as follows: on any official in the service of the state, any designated airport security officer, an air safety service security officer, and any person involved in the application of such security program in an official capacity.
Thank you. Sorry, I missed that. You did say that, and I was actually... Okay.
And then also in B as well, second line, it is content of such program, that's plan.
Okay, we've got that, yeah? And in particular, state law advisors, we've got that. Okay, thanks for that. Yeah, that's all just consequential, getting the wording right. Sorry about that. 48, 49, 50, 51... 52, 53, 54, 55, 6, 57, 58, 59, 60, 61, 62, 63, 64, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, and 70, and 71. 72, 73, and 74. Okay. We think we've done it. Okay. So thanks for that. So report of the Portfolio Committee on Transport on the Civil Aviation Bill, B73, 2008, National Assembly, Section 75, Bill dated 12th November 2008. The Portfolio Committee on Transport, having considered the subject of the Civil Aviation Bill, B73, 2008, referred to and classified by the joint tagging mechanism as the Section 76 bill.
Exactly.
We got it right before. But it says 76 here. 75 bill. Report the bill with amendment B73A, 2008. Mover? Lemire? Seconder? Here. Thank you very much. Other members are allowed to move, you know. Okay, thank you very, very much to everyone. I've got a message which says that the debate has been scheduled for Wednesday. I'm personally trying to shift it to Thursday. I don't know if that's insuperably problematic for others. Wednesday's not a great day for me. You also prefer to. So you would also like to do that. Okay, so that becomes an additional. I'd ask my PA, Mercy, but if we could also, through you, also say that we're asking for Thursday. I hope that's not a problem for anybody else. We've not asked for a long debate. I see they've given, the message I've got is from my whippery, which says 17 minutes for the ante is probably too much, but 17. But we don't have to take all the 17 time. There's an important bit of legislation, so it's important to explain it and why we've done it, but it doesn't require long speeches, okay? But, I mean, opposition parties are entitled to... 17 to ANC, that suggested a 70-minute debate. I think that's when we tend... Maybe it's... I'm not sure when we get 17. When we get
17...
Yeah... Yeah, I agree. Okay, we'll ask for a 45-minute debate. Yeah, okay. Or we can reach an agreement amongst ourselves to treat it as a 45-minute and not use all the time allocated to us. I'd like to really thank state law advisors. It's been a complicated thing. Even before it came to us, I know it was complicated. And long-suffering members of the department who worked long hours and things. Thanks very, very much. We'll say that formally also in the House, but we'd like to do it. I'm thanking on behalf of all the members who've really appreciated the hard work you've put in. Really appreciate it. I think we've done quite good work, actually, because I think it was a fairly challenging thing. And we also won't forget to mention the statement, the report that we're making, not the report on the bill, but also the additional report that we're making about the advice to have a revisit on the whole thing. Okay, I don't know if anyone... That's probably all we're going to do as this committee before we get unelected and a new committee comes in. So And let me also, and we may still have to meet on one or two things, but in case we don't, let me thank all the members, ANC, and also from the other parties. Thanks very much. I mean, I think that I've enjoyed working with this committee. Even if you haven't enjoyed working with me, I've enjoyed working with you. Okay. But that's nice, you know. Okay. Go well, everyone, and thanks very much. Okay, Adam?
I don't know.
Lost and found key. Okay, thank you, Lord Martin. Good. Okay, sorry, there's one last thing. That we've been invited by the department to a special Africa Indian Ocean Regional Air Navigation meeting of 2008. I'm not sure why we get invited to it, but that's very nice. It's on the 24th and 29th of November at Durban International Conference Center. Parliament is not paying. Says it, but when departments invite, that's parliamentary policy now. Departments that invite members must then pay for it. The department says it's not paying. But Durban residents or anybody else who wants to go and make it on their own way, they'll pay for. What will the department pay for? For ground travel. And accommodation? No. Ground travel.
It means those who are used to oversight.
Yes.
They can be part of it. Oversight on the ground.
Yes, exactly.
And then accommodation?
No. They are grounded.
Let us request the department chair to give us a guest before we get unelected.
Okay.
This is the last opportunity that the department.
Okay, we will try again.
Because they have failed for the past 5 years.
Okay.
It's the last opportunity that they can have the guest at
all. Okay, we'll try once more. But okay. Okay. Thanks very much. Thanks, Jeff. Is there lunch? Or in the canteen? Apparently there is lunch in the cafeteria.
Okay. So if the department doesn't teach us well, we have to